Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, October 19, 2017. The first kidney hospital opens in South Sudan.
This facility will enable our citizens who have kidney disease to receive first-class treatment right here at home. They will no longer have to travel abroad for diagnosis or long-term care.
And traders in Bor market complain about garbage.
Garbage is now scattered everywhere. We are going to have diseases within no time. We are trying to maintain, but pigs, they just come and destroy everything. Now I don't know what we are going to do.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir opened South Sudan's ever first kidney hospital today in the capital. The hospital is built by a Sudanese investor. It is a breakthrough for kidney patients. The director of Juba Teaching Hospital says the new kidney hospital will provide free services to all kidney patients in South Sudan, including foreigners who have been residing in the country for at least 6 months. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Guests clapped and women ululated at today's ribbon-cutting ceremony as President Salva Kiir officially opened the Al Cardinal Kidney Hospital in Juba. Mr. Kiir says the hospital's opening marks a milestone in addressing the serious medical needs of South Sudanese.
This facility will enable our citizens who have kidney disease to receive first-class treatment right here at home. They will no longer have to travel abroad for diagnosis or long-term care. And I am especially proud that through Al Cardinal Hospital, the Ministry of Health will be able to provide free dialysis for those requiring that service.
Health Minister Dr. Riagai Kok says it's the first time kidney diseases will be treated here since South Sudan became an independent country.
We have been trying to treat malaria, blood pressure, and diabetes. We were able to do other small operations. So today, the 19th of October, will be marked in history that we have services to cater for kidney cases for the first time in the country.
Dr. Maker Isaac is director of Juba Teaching Hospital, the country's only referral hospital. Dr. Isaac says the facility receives 20 new patients each month, but the overwhelming majority of kidney patients are referred to other countries for treatment. Dr. Isaac says a large number of patients have suffered from suspected kidney diseases nationwide, many of whom have died because there were no facilities to treat and diagnose the disease.
We were very sad because we cannot help them. People die in front of us. And we believe this death can be prevented simply by cleaning the blood of the patient, by dialysis, the blood of the patient. But we were not able to do anything. We just watched them dying. Those who cannot go to Khartoum or cannot go to Kenya or Uganda, they die because they have no money.
Dr. Isaac says poor kidney patients who were not able to travel to neighboring countries can now receive treatment at home free of charge.
This will make a very huge impact in the care of the patients in South Sudan. Before this, our patients were not treated in South Sudan. Those who got renal failure, either they die or we refer them to a neighboring country. There are also so much patients of South Sudanese origin who are living in Sudan and in neighboring countries. They are not able to come because we don't have a renal dialysis center. These people now will be able to come to see their parents. So this will unite families which are separated and will save so many lives.
Asraf Said Ahmed, a Sudanese investor who heads the Al Cardinal group of companies, built the hospital. The hospital has 10 dialysis machines and the capacity to treat at least 50 patients a day. Speaking in Arabic, Asraf called on President Kiir to ensure that the hospital remains well-staffed.
My president,
I want this center to be taken care of. If this center is managed well, it means citizens will get good services. We are here ready to support this center. I call upon all the organizations and foreign embassies here to work and provide for the other needs of South Sudanese citizens.
While praising the Al Cardinal group of companies for building the hospital, Mr. Kir called on additional outside investors to provide financial assistance to some of South Sudan's other sectors.
In addition to opportunities in the health sector, we urge you to expand to other areas such as education, agriculture, real estate, and industry.
President Kir encouraged investors to partner with the government to create jobs for the younger generation in a wide variety of employment opportunities. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Traders in the Jonglei state capital, Bor, say they pay a monthly fee of 500 South Sudanese pounds each for garbage collection, but local authorities are not collecting garbage. An official with Bor municipality says garbage has not been picked in several weeks because the town's one and only garbage truck broke down. Deng Gai Deng has this story for VOA from Bor.
Hundreds of large black plastic bags of decaying garbage sit in a messy pile along street corners in Maron Market, the main market in Bor. Pigs, dogs and flies have met the heap of garbage their playground and feeding centers. Public health official in Bor designated the Wunichwe area a dumping site. It is about a two-hour walk east of Bor town. In the past, one municipal truck hauled away garbage bags on the streets and in the markets and uploaded them at the dumping site. For several months now, piles of garbage have become a common sight on Bor streets and markets, causing an unbearable stench that warps its way up from many streets. 30-year-old Ramina Loyola, who owns a restaurant at Maror Market, says she fears contracting a disease from garbage that has accumulated around her restaurant.
Garbage is now scattered everywhere. We are going to have diseases within no time. We are trying to maintain, but pigs, they just come and destroy everything. Now I don't know what we are going to do.
Trader Abraham Panchol Manyok, who works at Pan Akimda Clinic at Maror Market, says he too worries about his health and his clients' health.
When you go around the market, there is a lot of water and also garbage is all over. It is scattered in the market. And we never know, maybe there will be an outbreak of maybe another disease. Before that things happen, we need them to bring us a vehicle to transport this garbage to the place they are supposed to take it.
Akoi Cholukur works at Lueda Pharmacy in Bor. Kur says he does not understand why Bor municipal authorities are not collecting garbage despite charging traders and other business owners for the service.
In our clinic here now, we have almost now 2 months now with garbage now. There are no vehicle now take garbage here in our pharmacy. I'm worried about it because if the environment is not good, if you have garbage here, the health will be not good.
Kur is urging municipal authorities to quickly clear the piles of garbage to protect the lives of residents. Deng Akwe, Chief Executive Officer at Bor Municipal Council, says he too is concerned.
We have not yet collected the garbage for almost 3 weeks, and it's because we have a problem of the truck. We are trying to hire the car, but we don't get any truck to be hired. We are mightily concerned.
Akwe says while local officials continue to look for a new garbage truck, he urges traders to store their trash in tightly concealed, sturdy plastic bags. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
Still on health matters, an international non-governmental organization called Polish Humanitarian Action is teaching children about hand washing to help prevent the spread of diseases such as cholera. Some residents in Juba say they know personal hygiene is important, but they have no access to clean water. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Pupils at the Faith and Hope Primary School in Juba's Joppa Village practice washing their hands with clean water and soap. The school is located in one of the areas where a cholera outbreak recently occurred. Bonga Moses, Polish Humanitarian Actions Hygiene and Sanitation Officer, describes why the Faith and Hope Primary School was chosen to stage today's demonstration on the importance of good hygiene.
We chose this area, Gure and Budele, because it's one of the area that was marked as the hotspot by the Minister of Health since 2014 and 16, when the cholera outbreak in the country.
As of June 11th, more than 6,800 cholera cases were reported this year in South Sudan. At least 174 people died from cholera. Students here at the Faith and Hope School say they were terrified of contracting cholera during the outbreak and will take every precaution they can to stay safe.
I am in primary six. How to keep yourself from cholera? Drink boiled water and do not drink contaminated water. Also, eat hot food. I am in primary eight. You must recover your food. Boil water. Wash your hand after cleaning baby bottles. And cover your water and food. Wash all food before eating.
Cholera, 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 cholera. Cholera, you are a killer disease. You come to destroy our life. You have killed innocent people, rich people every day. Hospitals are full of you. Cholera, cholera, cholera. We don't know where are you coming from exactly.
Juba residents say they know that washing hands with clean water and soap helps prevent cholera, but they complain that they have no access to clean drinking water, which increases the risk of getting cholera. A majority of residents living in areas hit by cholera say they cannot afford to buy clean drinking water and drink water from the Nile River, exposing them to cholera and other waterborne diseases. Joppa resident Nono James says before a borehole was dug on the grounds of a nearby school in her area, residents depended on water from a single well. Speaking in Arabic, Jamie says in most cases her family of three children and husband drink untreated or unboiled water. This well is sometimes helpful if we put chlorine in our water, Nono says. But she says when there is no chlorine, there is nothing they can do to have safe drinking water. Joppa resident Aliru Monica, who heads a primary school, says the same goes for her.
Here, before we are getting water from the well, but now, as I speak now, we have a borehole. It was not all that safe, because you see many people getting, like 4 or 5 women getting water at the same time. The water was not all that safe.
Polish Humanitarian Action says it installed 7 boreholes in Joppa village, but only 3 are functioning despite the huge demand of clean drinking water in the area. Hygiene and Sanitation Officer Moses says the lack of clean water sources should not stop residents from boiling their water and practicing other forms of good hygiene. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what is the latest on Kenya's rescheduled presidential election? Find out more from our VOA reporter in Nairobi.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think it's important for men to learn how to cook?
In the first place, let's say you stay alone, you don't have money, but you can get something to cook. Yeah, it's very important.
Africa, we have got our own roles, and also the ladies have got their own roles. But now, in this 21st century, we realize that what a man can do, a lady also can do on the other side. So it is good for a man or boys to learn how to cook at a very early stage.
In case when they are not with their wives, they are able to cook for themselves instead of going to spend money and buying food in the restaurant.
Can help you, for example, if your wife is sick or she's not there, you can cook for yourself and produce something for kids.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Daily Nation newspaper reports President Uhuru Kenyatta's Jubilee Party has filed a court case against NASA leader Raila Odinga and his running mate Kalonzo Musyoka on their no-election call. The case was filed today at the Supreme Court in Nairobi. Mr. Kenyatta has refused so far to meet with Kenya's Electoral Commission chairman, saying he needs to be on the campaign trail. VOA's Vincent Macquarie is in Nairobi following developments there and spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis about what this latest turn of events means for the country's moving forward.
First, we can say that uncertainty is growing by the hour. In fact, a short time ago, the main opposition leader, Raila Odinga, flanked by his lieutenant in the NASA coalition, made it very clear that they don't see a possibility of an election on the 26th of October. One of the reasons that looks like something that has some credence is that they have not heeded, and they don't seem to be willing to heed the call by the chairman of the Electoral Commission, Mr. Wafula Chebukati, to have a meeting between President Uhuru Kenyatta and Mr. Raila Odinga to solve or resolve some of the issues that could have called a fair, free and credible election. Uhuru Kenyatta made it very clear that they have no interest in having a meeting, having a dialogue with Mr. Raila Odinga at the IBC. As far as they're concerned, the only dialogue they want to have is the voters during the voting day. So it looks like things remain uncertain because the chairman of the Electoral Commission has made it very clear that unless there is a meeting between the main opposition presidential candidate and the president of the country, Uhuru Kenyatta, and that certain officials of the IBC step aside, it doesn't look likely that a credible and free election can take place.
Would the elections take place at all then?
It remains to be seen because if you listen carefully to the Electoral Commission chairman, he kind of implies that unless those changes happen right now, he would not guarantee that an election would happen, and if it happens, that it would be credible. But he has also kind of hinted that he could step aside, could resign, potentially, if he feels like the environment does not kind of create conducive atmosphere for an election that can be credible, and he does not want to be the person who will preside over an election that will not be credible. But at the same time, he has warned that if these things are not resolved and that they do not come together and talk about what to do about the date of October 26, the country could potentially explode into chaos. So everybody is praying that something will happen between now and the 26th. Nobody is sure that this election will happen. But of course, the Jubilee Coalition is saying the election has to happen. The opposition on the other side says the election will not happen.
What are people on the ground saying? I know you said that they are praying and hoping that this is resolved, but what are some of the things that you're hearing?
Well, it all depends, again, on who you're talking to. Those who are supporters of the ruling coalition Jubilee believe that the election should go on and that their candidate, the President Uhuru Kenyatta, would win, and they believe he won in August. And so they don't really care about what anybody's saying. Those in the opposition coalition, NASA, believe that the election should not take place now that even their presidential candidate has officially withdrawn, but they believe that any election that will take place will be illegal. Any result that will come out of those elections will be illegitimate. At the same time, there are those who are in the middle ground who are saying perhaps it is time to suspend this process and consider having an election in 90 days, a fresh nomination, a fresh election, but after fixing the problems of the electoral body so that whatever election that will take place will be credible.
That was our colleague Vincent Macquarie speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis from Nairobi. Remittances from the overseas diaspora constitute a vital part of the economy of many developing nations. none more so than Somalia, where the inflows add up to more than foreign aid and investment combined. But analysts warn the industry is poorly understood by regulators and thanks, putting welfare of millions of people at risk. Henry Ridgewell reports for VOA.
Every month, Fatma Ahmed sends $200 of the earnings she makes in London to her family in Somalia.
It's for daily life, for rent, for buying the grocery things and to live over there, because actually in Somalia that much we don't have.
The 2 million Somalis living overseas send an estimated $1.3 billion back home every year. With no formal banking system in Somalia, most of the diaspora use remittance services. Abdi Rashid Diwali is CEO of Dahab Shiel, one of Africa's biggest remittance services.
Now it's so instant, where we have the latest technology with the internet, secure channels that we can use to send money back home, or we use mobiles and other means of, you know, smartphone and technology where it will help us to deliver money quickly, but also less costly. Technology is supporting us also with a compliance issue.
Remittance companies still rely on global banks to route the money. Those banks must comply with regulations on money laundering and the financing of crime and terrorism. Citing those concerns, many have chosen to withdraw from the market, unnecessarily, says remittance industry expert Laura Hammond of London's School of Oriental and African Studies.
Very often it's not based on any kind of empirical evidence that shows that money is going into the wrong hands. The fear is just, you know, Somalia, there's a conflict in Somalia, there's the Al-Shabaab movement, and so there's a problem in a sense, a real precarious nature of the Somali remittance industry.
The industry got a high-profile boost last month as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated $1 million using the remittance firm Dahab Shiel, along with mobile phone companies Somtel and eDahab, with the money transferred live to 1,000 families suffering the drought in Somalia. Former US President Barack Obama also attended. The technology is moving fast, but the cooperation of the global banking system remains key, and the remittance industry wants regulators to do more to support this lifeline. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Participants of a conference in Cairo have been pondering on the use of new technology to build the future of African cities. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from the Egyptian capital.
A three-day gathering of African innovators and entrepreneurs got underway at Cairo's French University Wednesday as enthusiastic participants shared ideas and discussed technological developments to help build a better future for the continent's estimated 1.25 billion residents. Nigeria's Afrolabs organized the conference, and its head, Michael Oluwabgemi, believes that using technology is the key to breaking down artificial borders between people and countries.
We need to start using technology to break down the artificial walls that we've set up among ourselves. Technology offers a unique solution. Technology, after all, does not respect borders.
One topic centered on the need for African universities to do a better job of innovating and of using those innovations constructively. Participant Idris Bello complained that universities are often failing to tailor their intellectual assets to their productive output.
We have failed to closely link what we learn in schools with the issues, the problems we have in the ecosystem. And so you have thousands of projects just sitting in libraries, sitting in books, without being commercialized or translated into actual solutions to our problems.
Despite the best efforts of the African continent's nearly 250 universities, no African country was listed on last year's Global Innovation Index. Another subject that participants focused on was the active engagement of women in the economic and technological future of their countries. A woman entrepreneur, Florence Tofa from Ghana, deplored the cultural stigma in many African countries of women becoming active entrepreneurs.
For most of the women that I come across, the common challenge has always been right after school, the expectation from family is that maybe get a job, get married, and then start a family.
Afrolab stressed its own theme of using technological hubs in several dozen countries on the continent to connect those seeking solutions in one place with problem solvers in another. As the head of one hub in West Africa put it, we need to encourage Africans to be job creators rather than job seekers. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. President Salva Kiir opened South Sudan's first ever kidney hospital today in Juba, calling it a breakthrough. The hospital was built by a Sudanese investor. The director of Juba Teaching Hospital says the new hospital will provide free services to all kidney patients in South Sudan, including foreigners who have been residing in the country for at least 6 months or more. Mr. Kiir says the facility will allow citizens with kidney diseases or problems to receive first-class treatment at home in South Sudan, including free dialysis. Health Minister Dr. Riak Guy Cock says it marks the first time kidney diseases can be treated inside the country since South Sudan became independent. Dr. Maker Isaac, director of the Juba Teaching Hospital, says the facility will take in 20 new patients each month, but some kidney patients will still be referred for treatment in other countries. He says many patients have suffered from suspected kidney diseases nationwide, but have not been able to be treated or diagnosed in the country up until now. Traders in Bor say local authorities have not been collecting garbage. Each trader paid a monthly fee of 500 South Sudanese pounds to get their trash picked up. Traders say they worry that the decaying garbage could lead to an outbreak of diseases. A Bor official says garbage has not been collected in several weeks because the town's one and only garbage truck is broken down. Hundreds of large plastic bags of garbage sit in piles in Morol Market, the main market in Bor. And finally, the international NGO Polish Humanitarian Action is teaching children to wash their hands with soap and clean water in order to prevent the spread of diseases like cholera. Tuesday was International Handwashing Day. Some Juba residents say they know personal hygiene is important, but they have no access to nearby clean water. Pupils at the Faith and Hope Primary School in Juba's Jopa Village practice proper hand washing as part of Global Hand Washing Day. The school is located in one of the areas where a cholera outbreak recently occurred. Bonga Moses, who is with the Polish NGO, said that that school was chosen because of the importance of good hygiene and also because it's located in an area where there was an outbreak. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Seasons of Peace by W.J.
Now and forever.
So, is that good?
W.J. was.
We have been listening to WJ with the song Seasons of Peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. What do you think about our show? Send us an email on southsudan@voanews.com. You can also look us up on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I will worry less, I'll sing a quest.